The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter number 27, Text number 4, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on March 26, 2010, in Radadesh, Belgium.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 27, Text number 4.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shayana
Unnadha
Mada
Mahamana
Maha
Arha
Talpe
Mahishi
Bhuja
Upadi
Tam
Eva
Vira
Manyate
Param
yata
tama
abhibhuta
na
nijam
param
cha
yat
shayana unnandamano
shayana
unnadhamado mahamana
Maharha
talpe mahashi
bhujopadi
tameva virya
manyate param yatas
tamo babuto
nanjijang
param chayat
tamo
bibuto
nanjijang
param chayat
Shayana
Nanda Mado Mahamana
Mahar
Hatalpe Mahashi
Bhujopadi
Tameva
Virya
Manyate
Param Yatas
Tamo
Bibhuto
Nanijang Param
Shayat
Shayana,
lying down.
Unnadamada,
increasingly illusioned.
Mahamana,
advanced in consciousness.
Mahar
arhatalpe,
on a valuable
bedstead.
Mahishi,
of the queen,
bhuja,
arms,
upadi,
pillow,
tam,
her,
eva,
certainly,
vira,
the hero,
manyate,
he considered,
param,
the goal of life,
yata,
from which
tama
by ignorance
bibhuta
overwhelmed
na
not
nijam
his actual self
param
the supreme personality of Godhead
cha
and
yet
what.
Translation and purport
by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
In this way,
increasingly overwhelmed
by illusion,
King
Puranjana,
although
advanced in
consciousness,
remained
always lying
down with his
head
on the pillow
of his wife's
arms.
In this
way, he considered
woman
to be his ultimate life and soul, becoming thus overwhelmed by the mode of ignorance. He could not understand the meaning of self-realization of his self or of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Human life is meant for self-realization. First of all, one has to realize his own self, which is described in this verse as nijam. Then he has to understand or realize the Supersoul or Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, when one becomes too much materially attached, he takes a woman to be everything. This is the basic principle of material attachment. In such a condition, one cannot realize his own self or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.2, it is therefore said, Mahat sevang dvaram mohor vimuktes tamodvaram yoshitam sangi sangam. If one associates with Mahatmas or devotees, his life of liberation, his path of liberation is opened. But if one becomes too much attached to women or to persons who are also attached to women, that is, attached to women directly or indirectly, he opens the tamodvaram, the door to the darkest region of hellish life. King Puranjana was a great soul, highly intellectual and possessed of advanced consciousness, but due to his being too much addicted to women, his whole consciousness was covered. In the modern age, the consciousness of people is too much covered by wine, women, and flesh. Consequently, people are completely unable to make any progress in self-realization. And the first step of self-realization is to know oneself as spirit, soul, apart from the body. In the second stage of self-realization, one comes to know that every soul, every individual living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 15.7. Mamaivangsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana manashashtani indriyani prakriti stanikarshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. All living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, in this present civilization, both men and women are allowed to be attracted to one another from the very beginning of life. And because of this, they are completely unable to come to the platform of self-realization. They do not know that without self-realization, they suffer the greatest loss in the human form of life. Thinking of a woman always within one's heart is tantamount to lying down with a woman on a valuable bedstead. The heart is the bedstead, and it is the most valuable bedstead. When a man thinks of women and money, he lies down and rests on the arm of his beloved woman or wife. In this way, he overindulges in sex life and thus becomes unfit for self-realization.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Madha Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupa Sagra Jata Sagana Ragunatan Vita Tam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So, we have a valuable bedstead right here in the home. Our consciousness is the most valuable bedstead. But that very consciousness was the most valuable bedstead. It becomes tamodvaram. It becomes the gateway to hell for a man who meditates on a woman or a woman who meditates on a man. We are unfortunately living in a society which is training us from the very beginning to do this. We're being trained how to absorb our consciousness in sex. That's how we're trained. The movies, the pop songs, it's all over the internet. We're being hit with it constantly. All this junk mail coming into your email box. Buy Viagra, you know, whatever they are, they pronounce it. Enhance your sex power. We're being bombarded with this nonsense. Everywhere. Sex, 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 sex. As if somebody could become happy by sex indulgence. Has anyone ever become happy by sex indulgence? Has anyone in the history of the universe ever become happy by sex indulgence? Dushparena nalena cha. That desire burns like fire and it's never satisfied. Can you satisfy your fire by giving it more fuel? Well, let's say, thank you, now I will cool down. You've given me, I was hungry for fuel, you have given me, now I will cool down. No. You feed fuel to that fire, it becomes more hot. So by indulging in sex life, one becomes more lusty. It's not that you can relieve yourself of sex desire by indulging in sex. You become more lusty the more you indulge in sex. Therefore, although there is license for grihastha, it is under restriction. You may have sex with your wife once in a month only if you want to make her pregnant, otherwise no sex life. And you must chant 50 rounds of japa before you have sex. People are amazed how you, Hare Krishna people, you must be really frustrated people practicing celibacy You must be so frustrated. Sexually frustrated people. But that is not a thing. I remember one householder couple, the husband, he was telling me many years ago when I was a brahmachari in our Miami temple. One householder, I don't know why he told me, but he was really enlivened. He wanted to share it with me. He said, you know, last night my wife and I, we wanted to have a child, so we chanted 50 rounds and for having sex. And but after chanting the 50 rounds, we were so high in the mantra, we said, let's wait till next month. They didn't want to come down, you see, to the gross bodily platform. I mean, it's a bodily function, just like passing stool. You know, it feels good to pass stool, you know. It's a thing. But it's such a hassle, you know. If I could give up passing stool, I would give it up forever. It'd be nice to just not have to deal with it anymore. It's such a hassle. So the same thing with sex. It feels good, but it's such a hassle. The good thing about sex is you can give it. Passing stool, we have to do. You can't avoid it. Unless you fast till death. You have to pass it. But sex, we have an option. We can give it up. Brahmasa tapasa brahmacharena. You see, we can give it up. So why not give it up, you see? That is Vedic culture. Vedic sex education means how to give up sex. This rascal modern education means how to increase sex. I was actually shocked. I was going on. When I opened up a little Namahat center in Austin, Texas, where there's a big, big university, I thought, well, why not? They have a Sanskrit department. Why not take a semester of Sanskrit, you know? So I took my semester of Sanskrit. I remember the day I went for my final exam. I took a shortcut through the health center, the campus health center. It's the easiest way to get to my exam place, you know. I cut through the health center, and there in the lobby, I couldn't believe it. They were showing, the demonstrating the students how to have safe lesbian sex. I was going, what? They're teaching the students how to have safe lesbian sex. This is where our tax dollars are going. A state university paid by taxes is teaching the students how to have safe lesbian sex. You see? So, this is not sex education. Sex education means how to give it up as soon as possible. The sooner the better. You see? In the Vedic times, the brahmachari was so potent. He was so potent in his brahmacharya, he had never passed samana. He was doing all austerities as brahmachari, and if he wanted to get married, in one time sex he could make his wife pregnant, business finished. You see? This is actually a measure of our advancement in Krishna consciousness. How much am I free from sex desire? Does my mind still like to do a little flirting around, you know? And I like to bring a woman into the bedstead of my heart and flirt around a little bit, or a man, you ladies, bringing a man into the bedstead of your heart. Do we still like to do that a little bit? Play around, mess around a little bit in our minds? Is it? Or do we no longer have a taste for doing them? Is it? That's how you can measure your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Do you still dally with the opposite sex in your brain, in the bedstead of your brain? Or are you totally disinterested in it? One of our great acharyas, Jamunacharya Almandri of South India, Formerly, he had been king. And in Vedic times, king meant harem. And harem means big, big facility for sex pleasure. But now he's completely become a pure devotee of the Lord. He's given up his worldly enjoyments. And he wrote very, very beautiful prayer. Yadavadi mamacheta Krishna padaravinde Navanava rasadamanu yattarantumasit Tadavadi vatanari Sangame smaryamane Bhavati mukushushtu nishtivanam cha. So nice poetry. He says, ever since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, deriving what? Nava-nava-rasa. That's easy Sanskrit to figure out what that means. Newer and newer taste. Nava-nava-rasa. Ever since I've been engaged in the service of Radha and Krishna, I'm getting nava-nava-rasa in that seva. Newer and newer taste at every minute. If by chance, due to my past nasty habits, the thought of enjoying sex life comes in my brain, then my lips curl with distaste and I spit at the thought. So do we spit or do we want to chew it? That is a measure and where we're at spiritually. If such come in, we want to chew them around a little bit, or you want to immediately spit them out. Then their coming in doesn't mean you're fallen. As Krishna points out in the second chapter, text number 70 of the Bhagavad Gita, apuryamanam machala pratishtam samudramapa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayang pravishanti sante shushamtim apnoti nakamakami. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but always remains still, can alone achieve peace, and not the person who strives to satisfy such desires. So for a desire like that to come in doesn't mean that, oh, now I'm fallen, I have to just give up Krishna consciousness. No. It just means you have a healthy body. You have good hormones. You got active good hormone. But the proper thing, when those thoughts come in, you know, little thought comes in, it's okay, here it comes, now let it go. Just like coming by, you know. You don't let it enter into the, don't let it come in and take residence. It's just coming, it's coming in, okay, let it keep going. That's all. Just like a few years ago, I was visiting our Amsterdam temple. And in the early morning, I thought, let's take a little Japa walk around the block. Now, I wasn't used to this. I'd never seen this in the U.S. But I went around the corner there, and there was a storefront. There was a little window, you know. And there was a lady sitting there in a lingerie. And the doorbell that we accept MasterCard and Visa. And I went, wow. You know, you know, 8:30 in the morning, there's a prostitute sitting there, you know, live prostitute, just waiting. You know, ring the bell, bring your credit card, let's go. And wow, you know. So, you just keep walking. You go, wow, and you keep walking. Hare Krishna, keep walking, you know. Then you're okay. But if you stop and you ring the doorbell and get your, then you're finished. So just because some thought enters the brain doesn't mean, oh, now I'm degraded, I have to give up. No. It just means you have good hormones. That's all. So let it comes in, just keep moving. Don't let it take residence there. There's another interesting side point to this verse. Krishna is saying, the ocean which is ever being filled but always remains still. That makes us question the scientific conclusion that melting icebergs will elevate the sea level. which is the big anxiety of the modern day society. Oh no, New York is going to be underwater. Global warming. But Krishna actually says, actually the ocean always remains the same level. You may think, well, how is it possible, you know? How is it physically possible if all that ice up there melted down? Well, you know, Krishna can easily evaporate it in the form of rain, there could be lakes. That water could take residence in lakes, in areas that are now dry and arid. Krishna is not obliged to raise the sea level just because the icebergs melt, is it? It's an interesting point. But Krishna is saying the ocean always remains the same level, even though there's constantly all the water flowing into it. So I'm not convinced the scientists have got it right when they say, oh, you know, the ocean is definitely going to come higher and higher and higher. What is that island, the Maldives? I think it's called, off of India. They're so worried because their whole country is very low. They're buying a bunch of land in Australia in case they have to relocate the whole population. They're scared, you know, the whole country is going to go underwater. So I wonder if it's really true, because Krishna says, even though the ocean always remains the same level, even though so many rivers are running into it. So that's something that will be interesting to observe as the ice is melting. It'll be interesting to observe if it really does pan out as the scientists are saying it will. It'll be interesting to see in the light of Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, that's a side point. The point is that we really have to become very serious about getting that higher taste. Vishyavanivartante niraha rashive dehinang rashivashang rishopyasha parang vishvanivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So this is what will make us or break us in Krishna consciousness. Am I getting that higher taste? Or am I not getting that higher taste? If you can get the higher taste, then you become solidly situated in Krishna consciousness. But if we don't get that higher taste, very dangerous position. So where does that higher taste come? It comes by developing loving relationship with Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas. That's the secret of how to get higher taste. If we remain impersonalist, refusing to develop loving relationships with Guru, Vaishnavas, and Krishna, even though we may do so many spiritual practices, that higher taste will not come. And without the higher taste satisfying us, we will go again to the lower taste, sex life. We've seen it again and again and again in our ISKCON history. So it is the number one priority in each and every one of us is we must somehow or other get that higher taste for the holy name, for devotional service, for the darshan of the deities, for the relationships with devotees, all of these things, these should become full of juice and full of nectar for us by being properly engaged in. If we chant properly, if we associate properly, if we take darshan properly, if we do service properly, we'll taste the sweetest nectar in these activities. That's a fact. So we have to, the key is avoiding the namaparad. That's the key. That's the key. So we have a little time here for questions. Anyone have questions?
Because of the delayed breakfast. We can go on until 20 to 9 because of the delayed breakfast.
There's no breakfast today again.
Late breakfast.
Kadasi means late breakfast. Okay. All right. Okay. Today we will entertain all questions. Controversial, non-controversial, routine, All questions are welcome.
As a grahastha, it's very easy to understand what is gross sex like, and that we should control it and stay away from it unless it's for purity. Mm-hmm. But what about subtle sex life? What is it actually?
Well, one subtle sex life is to meditate on it, you see. That's one aspect of subtle sex life, is described in this verse. It's like you see one of these beautiful girls, we have so many beautiful girls in our movement, you see. You see one of the beautiful girls and then you start, you know, you keep her in your mind, trying to enjoy her beauty, you see. And that's even though you're not actually, it's all in the mind, it's subtle, but still it's deadly. It's a very deadly thing because, of course, it's not that you get the same reaction as you would from actually grossly engaging in so. But to think about it also is very dangerous because, as Krishna points out, in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text number 62 and 63, Dayato vishyam pum sam sangateshu bajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodo bijayate krodat bhavati sangmoha sangmahat smriti vibrama smriti vangshad buddhina sho buddhina shad pranashiti. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. From such attachment, lust develops. And then from lust, what do you get? Anger. From anger, bewilderment of memory. From bewilderment of memory, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, then you fall down again into the material pool. Bloop! Finished. So, you have to nip it in the bud. When those thoughts come, that beautiful woman, oh wow, really beautiful woman, nip it. It's just my hormones, it's not me. Just those rascal male hormones. Of course, they serve a good purpose as well, but I shouldn't. It was interesting. I was reading one article. One man had prostate cancer. So he was taking some heavy, heavy medicine that killed all of his, it completely wiped out his male hormones. And he was amazed. He was like a little baby. He was just like a little baby, you know. He sees a woman and it's nothing. It's just, you know, there's no sex desire at all. But as soon as his male hormones were killed off by this drug, he had absolutely no sex desire. Completely finished. So it's just the hormones. It's not us. You see? If you see a man and you get all revved up, you see a woman and you get all revved up, it's not you, it's just those hormones. So just realize it's not me, it's just some hormones in there doing a little chemical reaction. That's all it really is. So in this way, detach yourself from it. So of course, subtle sex also has other manifestations because we like to show I am great. It's a desire to be attractive to the women, subtly, you see. That I am, you know, name, fame, profit, and adoration, you know, a big name. I'm famous. So many women adore me. I'm wealthy, you see. So this profit, adoration, and distinction, they are also called subtle sex because it's a desire to be sexually attractive. There's that nice story, that nice example of Prabhupada. There was some huge pandal program in Delhi. Thousands of people were bowing down to Prabhupada. And he told one disciple that, you see, because I am free from sex desire, you see. So actually one naturally becomes glorified if one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness. But to seek being glorified, that is sex desire, a subtle manifestation of sex desire. Spiritual masters have to be very careful in this regard. Very careful. Prabhupada showed the perfect example. The first time in Los Angeles, when they gave, you know, really big, opulent Vyasa San, first time, Narayana Prabhu built it for Prabhupada. And the first time he had a big, regal Vyasa San, just a little tiny thing, it was, you know, Prabhupada started crying. He said, "I am not qualified to sit on this seat. But I'm doing so on behalf of my Guru Maharaj." So, especially someone who is a, you know, sannyasis, gurus, who get automatically worshipped within our society and honored so much, they'd be very careful. If you let it get to your head, you know, here today, gone tomorrow. We've seen it happen too many times in our society. They let it get to their head. I'm great. Never finished. So one, whatever honor or distinction comes to one because of their advancement in Krishna consciousness, they should just, they have to pass it on up, they have to pass it on up the Guru Parampara. Don't take it for yourself. Pass it on up the Guru Parampara to your spiritual master, to his spiritual master, all the way to Krishna. Just be transparent. Don't try to keep anything for yourself. Offer everything to Krishna through the Guru Parampara system. You see, if you try to keep it, you're guilty of subtle sex. And that can lead to a fall down. Subtle sex is the first step to gross sex, you see. Subtle sex leads to gross sex. That's a fact. I was counseling one brahmachari the other day in Vrindavan. And he was thinking, oh, well, this, to have this separation between men and women, this is artificial. Can't we be friends with the Brahmin, have some, you know, have nice friendly relationships with the Brahmin Srini? Of course, on one hand, I agreed with him because it's not that, you know, it's not that we should think, yeah, they're dirt. Sometimes that happens, you know. Yeah, dirt. No, that's completely bogus. There should be loving relationships. Even the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, there should be, and not that they, you know, they have to have loving mood towards to each other. It's like mother and son. It's not that our being detached and not intermingling men and women very freely and only doing it for our service. It's not that that means that we hate or we think they're dirt or something like that. That will also lead to fall down. There has to be loving relationship. That I respect you and love you as my mother. I respect you and love you as my son. And that's why I am not being buddy-buddy and intermingling for the protection of each other. So, anyway, does that answer your question? Okay. There was another question. I saw another hand. Any other questions? And everyone satisfied now? Yes.
I can ask also some related to the previous lectures, some question. Can I ask some question which is related to previous lecture?
Yes, certainly. You're welcome.
It is, you mentioned that if somebody doesn't preach, he's committing violence. Yeah? Not like according to power.
If a disciple doesn't preach, he's committing violence. Yes. This is my lecture?
Yeah, you mentioned
this. All right. Yeah, I can stand by that point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was saying that is in his form somebody who's not practicing non-violence. If you preach, you practice non-violence. But if is in his form somebody who's not practicing non-violence.
You're wondering if somebody is not a preacher within our society, are they considered violent? Is that what you're asking? Yeah. Prabhupada gave a very nice example from Indian Railways. It's actually interesting to note that the term GBC also came from the Indian Railways. I don't know if you all knew that. It came from Indian Railways. They had a GBC. Anyway, Prabhupada took different things from Indian Railways. This is another thing he took from Indian Railways. They used to have a poster to all the employees. It said the duty of every single employee of this company is to see that the wheel on the train is turning down, is rolling down the track. It's the duty of every single employee. Now, is every employee actually in that position? You can, I mean, of course, the engineer who sits there on the engine, you know, and pulls the throttle for the, you know, the engine to roll out of the station, he certainly is doing that. That's easily understood. What about some clerk who's just sitting in the office, you know, signing papers? How can he think that he's facilitating the wheel to roll down the track? Well, actually, Prabhupada explained, by signing some paper, he authorizes that train to roll down the track. So, actually, Prabhupada's, that was the mood in Indian Railways Company in those days, that every single employee has to see that the train is rolling down the track. So in our ISKCON movement, which is a preaching movement, and it is the duty of every single member of ISKCON to see that the train is rolling down the track, then he is a preacher. Whether he is a pujari, whether he is a gardener, whether he is a storeroom cleaner, whatever he may be doing, or a mother raising your children, it doesn't matter what is the position. If everyone is thinking and acting that we have to make this movement a success so that the whole world population can be delivered from birth and death, and let me do my service in such a way that I can become a perfect example of Krishna consciousness, you see, then he is preaching. What does Krishna say in chapter 3, text 21? Yad yadacharati shreshtas tattadeva tarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever a great man does, and the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So, is any devotee not being allowed to become an acharya, an ideal example of Krishna consciousness? Are we forcing any devotee not to be an acharya, an ideal example of Krishna consciousness? No, every single devotee is being encouraged, you become acharya. You become ideal example of Krishna consciousness. And Krishna says, anyone who becomes ideal example, by his influence, the whole world takes up Krishna consciousness. So don't tell me that I'm cleaning the temple room, therefore I'm violent. Because I'm not out distributing books. I'm violent. Because I'm not on Harinam, I'm violent. Tell the temple commander, why are you forcing me to be violent? And not letting me go out and preach. Engaging me here in cleaning the temple. Don't you know this is violence? You're committing violence on me by forcing me to become violent. By not letting me go. No. Don't concoct any nonsense philosophies like this. Not concoct. You become ideal example. This is what Prabhupada is telling us, that we become the ideal examples. And as I many times point out, I think I say it at least every two or three lectures, because it's such an amazing point from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada explains that if a devotee of the Lord becomes completely free from the nama parads, then he becomes Jagat Guru, and under his influence the whole world takes up Krishna consciousness. So is anybody stopping you from perfecting your chanting? Anyone stopping you? No! You must chant offensively. That would be violent, you see. But we are facilitating all of our devotees that they can become pure chanters of the holy name. And the more they become pure chanters, that they become naturally preachers. They naturally become preachers or propagators of Krishna consciousness. By that purity of their heart, they naturally become preachers. It happens automatically. Someone who is pure in heart, he cannot tolerate to see the suffering condition of the human civilization. I'm sorry I said civilization. What's civil about it anyway? So-called civilization, we can say. He can't tolerate to see this suffering going on in this so-called civilization. He finds every single opportunity to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. He's keen to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement. You see? So we are training everyone in our society to be in this Sankirtan mood, Sankirtan spirit. Some people like to play sports, you know, volleyball, basketball, baseball, football. But in fact, Dhanavir Maharaj wrote a very strong essay saying he was a former volleyball star, but he totally gave it up. He wrote a very strong paper against devotees engaging in sports. So I saw him the other day at Vrindavan. I said, Maharaj, I'm into sports. I said, the sport I'm into is this. Sports means ball game, right? Who controls the ball? I said, Maharaj, right now here's the real ball game that I like to play. Right now, the planet Earth is a huge ball, you see. And it's under the control of the asuras. So there's a big ball game going on right now between the suras and the asuras. Who will control this planet? You see? So I said, that's the ball game I like to play. That's the sporting that I like to do. It's Sankirtan, you see. How we can get this big ball back under the control of our team. You see, their team has it now. They're controlling the ball. Abortion clinics, slaughterhouses, you name it. It just goes on and on and on. It's horrible atrocities they are committing because they're controlling the ball. So our mission is we want to get that ball. Prabhupada told us in Mumbai. He said, now the world is being managed by rogues and demons. He said, you make your life successful and you take the management. Prabhupada wants us to become the leaders of this planet. You understand? We may not be political leaders. That's a lower level, actually. The highest form of leadership is brahminical leadership. So the Brahmins, simply by their saintly qualities, they attract the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras to follow them. And they guide the human population according to the Shastra. So we are meant to become like that, actual brahminical leaders, that the world leaders will come. How to run Belgium in a way that will please Prabhupada. How to run the European Union in a way that will please Prabhupada. How to run the U.S. in a way. We should be such ideal Vaishnavas, ideal Brahmin Vaishnavas, that all of the leaders will come. And they will seek, they will want to be trained here at Radhadev, you see. Leadership training. You have leadership courses here for the political leaders here at Radhadev. For all the prime ministers, the MPs, the presidents, they can come here and they can be trained how to run their countries in a way that will please Prabhupada, you see. Our preaching should come to this point. When Obama, you know, all of them will come here to Radhadev for training and how to become ideal leader according to Vedic system. So we have to be really, really men of and women of ideal character if we want to attract the leaders to become our students. But that's what we have to do. That's what it means to become leader. That's what Prabhupada wants us to do, to become leaders of that caliber. That means we really have to be serious about pure devotional service, cultivating pure bhakti. Not that I'm just going to coast along in karma, mishra, bhakti, you know, hope for the best at the time of death. No, that's not what Prabhupada wants. He wants to cultivate pure bhakti right now, pure devotional service mood. Any other questions? Yes.
You many times speak about great men and great women, but can you describe what are the qualities of a great man and a great woman?
Well, there's a list given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I don't have it memorized, but it's one of those things that'd be very nice. The 26 qualities are there. Compassion, control of the senses, not eating more than required, expert, poetic, silent. Silent means don't talk nonsense. Poetic is a really interesting one. That means that actually everybody is potentially a great poet, because pure bhakti is there within the heart of everyone. And we see it. Devotees who had no poetic ability, when they become Krishna conscious, they can speak very poetically and very beautifully. So that quality is there. Poet, become expert. You see, when you're doing something out of love, if you really love to do something, you keep doing it, you'll become expert. Just like somebody may not like their job, and they never become expert. They don't like their job. They're not into it. They just kind of struggle through it and get their paycheck. But they go home and they really love to play the guitar, see? And they become really expert because they love to play the guitar and they become super expert. If you love to do something, you'll naturally become expert in it. If you really love what you're doing, you'll naturally become expert. So therefore devotees, because they love Krishna and they want to please Krishna, one of the symptoms of a great devotee is he's expert in everything. Of course, that's embarrassing for us, you know. Persons like myself who are making so many mistakes here and there, it's embarrassing. It shows how unadvanced I am in Krishna consciousness. But when we actually become advanced, like Prabhupada, everything, every expert, he was expert in everything. And poetic also. This term poetic is very interesting. It's not only language, but Prabhupada is poetry in everything. It's like there was sometimes said poetry in motion. Prabhupada was, every gesture of Srila Prabhupada was poetic. The way he would hold his head, the way he would gesture with his hands. I mean, everything about him was pure poetry. Just a beautiful song, a beautiful poem, you see. His whole life, everything about him was like that. So just to be with Prabhupada, it was just the most amazing experience. That here's a person who's a walking art masterpiece. You know, everything about him, every little detail is like, you know, the most famous person out of the most amazing movie that was ever made, and it's happening right in front of you. So that's another quality of a great soul. Poetic. So that list can be researched. Of course, the rhythmical qualities are automatically included. Shamadamastaparshocham, Shantirarjamamevacham, Jnanam Viganamastakam, Bhamakaramasvavavajam. Controlling the mind, controlling the senses, practicing austerity, being clean, being tolerant, being honest, having very solid understanding of the Vedic philosophy and practically manifesting the Vedic teachings in one's life and being a great devotee of the Lord. You see, very, very totally devoted to Krishna. These are the qualities of brahmanas given by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So those are certainly included within the qualities of a great person. So you may say, well, should I cultivate the qualities? I should just focus on, you know, Krishna consciousness. Which is it? Sometimes that question is there. Which way should I go? Just try to be Krishna conscious, or try to develop those qualities? Because I'm Krishna conscious and the qualities will automatically be there. So which way should I go? The answer is both. Work it from both ends. Because by trying to develop those qualities, excuse me, it'll make it easier for you to be Krishna conscious. And by focusing also on being more Krishna conscious, then those qualities will become more manifested automatically. So those things enhance each other. Do both things. That's why we have our rules. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication and gambling, and chant 16 rounds. Prabhupada is engaging in working from both sides. You see, develop good habits, saintly qualities, and also develop Krishna Krishna consciousness. Both things, they're going parallel, you see. They're enhancing each other. Both things we should do. Try to be more saintly and more kind and forgiving in all of your dealings with all the Vaishnavas and the non-devotees as well. At the same time, try to increase your Krishna consciousness, and both things will feed off each other and strengthen each other. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu?
You mentioned that in one lecture, you mentioned that it's more easy or more difficult not to be Krishna conscious than to be Krishna conscious.
Yes.
And in terms of, like it seems that like in terms of chanting, it is more easy not to chant than to chant.
No, actually, yes, one could say that. In one state of consciousness, at one level of consciousness, that's a fact. It's like that famous example, the lady was asked to chant. She was told, "My dear lady, kindly chant, chant, chant." She said, "Can't, can't, can't." So on one level, that's true, you see. But on another level, it's easier to chant than it is to not chant. Is it easier for a fish to be in the water or out of the water? The fish is easier for him to be in the water or out of the water? In the water. That's his natural habitat. So the actual real reality and the highest level understanding is it's easier to chant than it is not to chant. Because the water, the ocean is bhakti, and we are aquatic animals. We are aquatic beings, in that sense, the analogy. So in the highest sense, it is more natural for us to chant than it is not to chant. And not chanting is an artificial imposition placed upon us by the influence of the modes of nature. It's not our natural position. How is it that somebody like Haridas Thakura could chant for 23 and a half hours a day and only spend a half an hour on bodily maintenance? And he was probably chanting then too. Was it a struggle for him to chant? No. He was just swimming in the nectar. Just relishing the nectar. So on the highest level, it's easier to chant than it is not to chant. Right now, we're in the unfortunate position, chant, 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 can't, can't, can't. That's our position right now. So how do we get to the natural position? That's the whole process of sadhana bhakti, you see. But we should understand, what is the liberated position? What is the actual natural position? We should know that it's not always going to be like this. I'm struggling to chant my rounds. It's not going to be that way. We have to understand, right now I'm in an artificial state of consciousness where I find not chanting more comfortable than chanting. It's an artificial state of consciousness. If I understand that, and I have full faith in the fact that actually the real position is it's easier to chant than it is not to chant, and I faithfully then chant my rounds on the instructions received from Guru, I faithfully chant them, having faith that I will eventually come to the natural state, which is it's easier to chant than it is not to chant. And if one faithfully executes these instructions, yasya deve para bhaktir tatha deve tatha guru tasyaite katita hirata prakashyante mahatmanah. If one faithfully executes these principles, you see, then all the whole Vedic wisdom becomes revealed, the whole spiritual world becomes revealed in due course. So keep chanting. The Maya will go away in due course. Right now the fog of material consciousness has set in. The heavy, dense, deep, dark fog of Kali Yuga has infiltrated our consciousness. That's our present state. But is it, what is natural for Radhadesh? To be fogged over or to be the sunshine, to be able to see your way around? Has there ever been so heavily fogged in here that you couldn't even see where you're going? Has it ever happened before? Such a heavy fog descended on Radhadesh, you couldn't even see your way from one building to the next. Is it ever that foggy, you see? It could happen, you know. heavy fog could come. So right now, our consciousness is in that kind of a fog. We can't see where we're going. You see? But therefore, tamasima jyotirgama, come out of the fog, come into the light by hearing from Guru, Krishna and Vaishnavas. If we take this direction they are mercifully giving to us, you see, we grab onto that rope of mercy, they will pull us out of this fog. So in this way we can understand. Well, I think I'm probably going over the limit now, 9:05, looks like I'm... So we thank you all very much. It's been very wonderful. Tonight we're heading on to our next destination, going on to Eastern Europe. And after three sessions of pure bhakti today, Uttama Bhakti. So we thank you all very much, my wife and I, Vishnupriya Devi Dasi. We very much appreciate the kind, loving association you've given us, wandering, wayward souls. Here in this wonderful Tirtha, Aradesh. Thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.